A quick hello and we're good to go. Welcome to the show, Isamates.
Sweet. I haven't had it anybody. I've been on, I don't know if hundreds, but many, many podcasts. Nobody ever sang an opening for me. So you're my first.
Right, brilliant. That was a guy called David Bain who told me when I was saying I'm going to do a podcast and I'm generally quite lazy about this kind of thing and I don't really want to do the editing. He said, just sing it. So I did it. Thank you, David. It's 300 episodes later, I'm still singing that same song. It's a delightful. So welcome, Isa. We're going to be talking about 8 essential AI-driven strategies for business growth. And as I said to you earlier on, Maria has invited you on because she knows that I need to know more about this so that we can drive CaliCube forward. So I'm going to learn a lot. I'll be asking the questions I think the audience will want to know the answers to, because it will help them with their business as much as it helps us with ours. So 8 essential AI-driven strategies for business growth. But before that, your brand SERP. Yeah. Here we have the brand SERP for MI Square Consulting. Generally speaking, I would hope to see a knowledge panel on the right. You don't have a knowledge panel. That's a real pity. Also, it's understood M squared consulting, which suggests that Google isn't very sure about MI squared consulting. How much do you communicate about your business?
So it's actually funny that's the one you chose. I never use this name. It's just the actual ownership company. So the company I actually use is Multiply, which is a relatively new company. I've established it this year. MI Square Consulting has existed as the formal, you know, LLC in Florida that holds the business. And I've actually rolled it doing business as name several times since. But the current company name is called Multiply, and it just spelled with AI in the end. And if you see my slides, which I think you do on your other monitor, you can see on the bottom left how it's spelled. So it's, yeah. So it's spelled like Multiply, but with AI in the end. So that's what I use. And it will be actually interesting to see how it shows up on Google, because I haven't really checked. It's been mostly, so I do a lot of speaking gigs, both virtual and in person. And I get invited to speak on many conferences, and I have a podcast. So all the business that I'm getting comes from that and not from Google, which is not a good thing necessarily, but this is what has been happening so far.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, there are a couple of things there. Number one is Multiply Health is what comes out top.
Interesting. I actually saw that, and they actually started using the name after I started using the name, but they're a giant, you know, consortium, and I'm me with a team of a few people. And so my ability to compete with them is literally impossible.
Right. Well, there are a couple of things. Number one, the most important thing, we'll just stick to that because we really want to talk about essential AI-driven strategies for business growth. But the fact that you are using DBA a lot means that it becomes increasingly complicated for Google to actually track what you're doing. It's in your mind that these things change, but you're not necessarily communicating it each time. And that's a very human error to make. Not necessarily an error, so that's unfair. It's a human way of functioning, and Google really needs things to be stable and consistent. So as a machine, it's very linear in terms of its understanding. And the other is actually Google's understanding isn't as far as it goes for us, because we're saying we're looking at the world through Google's lens. Not Google lens, but Google's lens. Google's view of your company is a huge insight into how the rest of the world views your brand. So we use Google to understand how the world perceives you. So it's Google's opinion of the world's opinion of you. And that's hugely interesting. And here we have Google's opinion of the world's opinion of you.
Okay.
And that looks pretty good. So as you said, you're out there with your videos, so they're appearing really well. You've got your LinkedIn profile at the top. If you want any kind of personal brand, you would need to create a dedicated website for yourself, because Google needs one point of focus per entity. LinkedIn isn't ideal. So that's the end of my advice for today. You are listening to Branded Search and Beyond with Jason Barnard. Now, back to the show. Now you're going to give me advice. What are the AI-driven strategies I need? And if I understand correctly, one thing I could do is take your course.
So taking my course is the deeper layer of just general, and we're going to talk about this actually in step one of the process. So if you want, I can just dive to the things I want to talk about, and the course will kind of find a way to sneak itself in there, I promise. And so it's really 7+1, and I'm going to just take you step by step through it. So the first step, and it's really the most critical one, is continuous education. And what do I mean by continuous education? I mean that the AI world is moving very, very fast. And my background, I was a CEO of several different tech companies. So my background is tech startups. So I've been in fast moving environments most of my career. Before that, by the way, I was an F-16 pilot. So interesting, gimmicky trivia point, which is also moving pretty fast. But what's happening in the AI is insane. Like, things are like dramatic upgrades are happening every single week. Now, a business cannot operate on weekly dramatic changes. You just cannot run a business this way. But understanding what's happening and how that may apply to your business, or how may that change your strategy, is absolutely critical. So the question becomes, how do I do that? How do I keep myself and my team and my company continuously educated? So number one is...
Can I ask a question really quickly?
Yes, sure.
My strategy so far has been, I look at all the changes and I try to analyze on site whether or not I can safely ignore it, put it to one side and not pay attention, or whether I need to investigate it. And probably I'm getting some of them wrong, but if you don't do that, there's no way of actually functioning anymore.
I agree.
Good.
So let's start with sources of information and then how you analyze them. So sources of information, there's obviously, you know, articles on Google. There's different, my biggest source of information is following the right people and having a very well curated Google page. So on my phone, I have a Google phone. So you have like a news section that I've trained over the last year to only give me real interesting AI news about big things that are happening. So I see that there, but the main thing is I follow the right people. I follow the right people on X. I follow the right people on LinkedIn. I follow the right people on TikTok. I follow the right people on Instagram. And over there, I get to see two things. And that's when it starts getting to, okay, what kind of education do you want? One is what's happening, what's changing. Big announcements, companies, new releases, new functionality, research papers that are doing crazy things. But with today's research papers, with how fast AI is moving, this research paper will be released with its code to GitHub or Hugging Face. And 3 weeks later, it will be a product by somebody. So it's not like, oh, it's a research paper. 4 years later, something will happen. It's a research paper. And then 2 weeks later, you can start using it. And right. So I follow these things. But the interesting thing with following people is that you get to see the use cases. And that connects to what you said. Like, is this use case somehow applicable for me or for my clients or my ecosystem? Doesn't have to be clients. And does it have a tactical difference in what I'm doing or a strategic implication to the future of my business?
Can you define tactical versus strategic? Is there a way for me to then say, well, that's going to be strategic and that's going to be tactical?
Absolutely. So tactical is things that I can apply in my business or for my clients today, and it will help them in some kind of efficiency. So doing a thing faster, spending less time, spending less money, making more money because I can now offer an additional thing that I couldn't do before. So this is tactical. Strategic, if I'll use your field, and I don't want to sound the alarms, but the world of search is going to be very, very different 2 years from now. Now, do I know What is it?
Luckily for us, because that's exactly why we're placed. We're the company who started to look at search differently first. looking at it as knowledge, recommendations, understanding recommendations, and then assessment of that knowledge and those recommendations. And my bet is that wherever it goes strategically, we're going to be sitting in the right place because we're focusing on LLMs, knowledge, and how that's analyzed for recommendations and assessment and opinion.
So you're a perfect example of the right direction of from a strategic perspective. But if you're a company that writes blog posts for companies, you may be out of business strategically. Yes. Like your business may not be needed in the very near future. So these are the differences, right? Is it something that solves a problem in my business or for my clients? Or is it a threat or an opportunity for the business that I'm in?
That's a really clear explanation. And it's really, really helpful. Have we actually started on the 8 points yet? The 7+1?
No, we're on point one. So but you might have taken the course somehow in one of my previous things wearing a hat, and I didn't know it was you.
Yep.
But so this is education, right? So you got to do this continuously, and you got to make sure your team does it continuously. But how do you do that? Like, how do you make sure a company stays updated, both in means of the knowledge as well as in means of application? And that's really step two. By the way, within step one, there's obviously the deeper layer of now starting with more quote-unquote formal education, such as taking courses. So the course that I provide is 4 sessions, 2 hours, in a cohort of people, usually in leadership positions. So we have very deep conversations on what you just asked me and other stuff as well, right? So this is a course. It's a much more deeper level of learning on the topic and how it applies to businesses. The next thing you want to do in the business, or if you're in any organization, is start an AI committee. So the goal of the committee is to do several things. Number one is to figure out the guidelines, the do's and don'ts within a company of how to use AI and how not to use AI, because you can do terribly wrong things if you don't understand how this thing works. So they're defining the guidelines, but also they're the ones responsible to continuously educate themselves, test use cases that either they thought of or somebody in the business saying, hey, you know, I saw this cool video on YouTube. Can we try this in our business? Because I think it would be interesting. Instead of letting everybody go wild, you say, okay, these two people, that's what part of their job is, to test these things in a safe taste bed and then deploy what's relevant and educate the rest of the company. So the committee becomes, if you want, the leadership group for AI implementation for the rest of the business. So not everybody has to listen to news every time, test stuff every time, and so on. It also makes it safe because they really understand what's happening. So that's the committee.
Brilliant.
The third component, and by the way, if you're asking yourself who needs to be on that committee, the first thing that needs to be on that committee is people from different aspects of the business. So somebody from finance, somebody from HR, somebody from sales, somebody for marketing, etc. Why? A, because they will bring different needs, and B, because it will be easier to then implement it in these departments as well, because you have a representative in each and every one of them, you know, sharing the knowledge related to that particular department.
And you also need somebody who actually knows how to implement this stuff so that they can say, well, that's not going to happen, it's not reasonable.
Correct. So the expertise in that specific field of the business and the clout, the influence in that particular step of the business matters. So people from different departments, someone from leadership, preferably senior leadership. So whether it's, you know, CEO, COO, somebody like that, because then you can make decision and it shows that there's a buy-in from leadership. And preferably these people, at least some of them, would be, you can do that, right?
Yeah, well, sorry, I was testing it. I just saw you do it. Yeah. Why can't I do it?
You can do a lot more cool stuff. You can do this. Wait, watch this.
Yeah, for anyone listening to audio, we're seeing hearts and thumbs up from gestures on the screen. And for some reason, I can't do it, probably because I haven't set something up. And this is AI image recognition. So brilliant. Yeah. Wonderful. Carry on. Sorry.
So you preferably, these people needs to be geeks as much as possible, or at least some of them, because then they will be excited about this whole thing. They will spend several hours a night like I do to test cool things that come up with AI that can then be applied in the business. So that's how you pick the people on the committee. But the committee's goal is really to lead the AI implementation, the business, in a safe way. That's the goal of the committee.
Okay.
Then you do a whole set of assessments or evaluations that are done, led by the committee, but done by a lot of other people. The first thing is a strategic assessment. So as I mentioned, AI may have strategic implications on the actual future of your business. And it could be positive, it could be negative, right? And you need to understand what those are. And for that, you need to understand where AI is going, right? What's the trajectory of where AI is going? Where is it leading? And what might be the implications of the needs of my clients? Like, you're serving somebody with a product or a service. Will their needs change? And with the way AI is moving right now, regardless of what you're selling, unless you're selling apples, it may likely be impacted with how they're going to perceive the world and interact with things, because AI will change the way they do things. So strategic analysis is one: look for opportunities, look for risks. The second thing is HR skills. So now that you understand where you want the company to go, what changes needs to happen, you need to understand whether you have the right skills in the company. The answer right now for 99% of people, the companies, is no. So then the question you need to ask yourself, yes,
is probably the question, or hopefully the question I was about to ask, is, do you recruit or train?
So you know the difference between a good question and an excellent question? An excellent question is when you have a slide for it. So this was an excellent question. But to ignore the slides for a second,
you haven't shared your screen, so I can't put your slides on the screen.
I thought it shared the
whole
time.
It disappeared, which is why I haven't been putting it on the screen. So for people listening and not watching, there is a slide deck. And I think Isa's been wondering why I haven't been putting the slides on the screen, but it's because I can't actually do it technically. So while he's doing that, we're looking at what apparently is a great question, because there's a slide. And that was beautifully done, Isa. You brought that in beautifully to allow me to say, actually, we can't do this. Carry on.
Perfect. Thank you. And so the question then becomes, do you hire or reskill? Right? And it's a different answer depending on your particular scenario and also on the gaps that you've identified, right? And I think the bigger the company is, the more it's going to be both. So you have to reskill your people. And why am I saying you have to reskill your people? Because every big tool that's out there today, Microsoft Office, Google G Suite, Salesforce, HubSpot, any ERP system are coming out with these AI assistants and co-pilots. So you cannot put your hand in the sand and say, well, you know what? I'm not going to use any of these AI tools, so I don't need to train any of my people. By definition, these tools are going to be part of your day-to-day tools, and you better learn how to use them because your competition will. And so you have to skill your people on how AI works so they understand the concepts and they understand the risks and they understand the benefits. So it does not matter which tools they're going to use. The tool becomes a specific application of the concepts that they already understand. But then when a new tool comes out and it's better and more advanced and can do more things, they can switch to the new tool while still understanding how the whole thing works. So that's the reskilling. The hiring comes to bigger things. You want to develop bigger AI capabilities. You want to develop your own software product that does AI stuff trained on your own data. Things like that, you're not going to take somebody from HR and train them how to do that. You're not going to take somebody from sales and train them how to do that. So if you have a software company, it's a different story. You can have people do that. But if you don't, you may want to hire people to help you build the bigger next layer of what AI can do for your business.
Right. And then, which is a really nice distinction between the using, we all need to know how to use it because we're going to have to use it whether we like it or not, and the building, which is obviously huge for a company, but you don't necessarily need it because you can just become a user of other people's technology and import that and then never hire anybody to do the AI or the ML building.
For sure. And I think from the hiring perspective, a lot of people, and that's why I'm very happy to say that, like as a consultant who does this for a living, a lot of companies choose to hire somebody temporarily, right? Somebody like me to help them train the people, figure out the gaps, start implementing the things, put the building blocks together So that's another option, right? You don't have to hire a VP of AI. You can bring in a consultant that can help you and analyze your gaps, analyze your skills, analyze where you're missing, analyze where you can win, implement it, and then that person can leave and you already have the skills to keep on going and running with the setup that was done.
Right, which brings me to the terribly trendy term of fractional. So you become a fractional VP of AI, even a fractional temporary VP of AI, like Caddycube is a fractional temporary CMO. Yep, when we offer our services, we become a fractional CMO for just 2 years, which makes it temporary. And that's delightful. The fractional temporary VP of AI or the fractional temporary CMO.
Yeah. So it's exactly that. So it sets you up in a good position to keep on going on your own.
Brilliant. Wonderful. Delightful.
Awesome. So that's HR skills. The next or HR analysis, I should say. The next level is analyzing and looking for low-hanging fruits. And what does that mean? It means that there are quick wins that you can gain in the day-to-day just using AI the way replacing some of the stuff you're doing today. And there's several different points to consider when you're doing that. And so the first thing is you want to look for stuff that AI does well. So what AI does well? First thing, it's very good at doing stuff that is repetitive. So anything that you have to do again and again and again, any tedious work, it knows how to do very well. It's also very good at data analysis and data prediction. So if I go to the world of search, things like meta tagging, things like analyzing what your competition is doing, things like these are things that that are repetitive. You need to do them again and again and again. And it requires data analysis and data prediction, and AI knows how to do that very well. You also need to ask yourself, what is the required human input to each and every one of those tasks? And I'll explain in a minute how you look at these tasks from the top down. But how much human input does it require? Some of it does not require any human input. That people are saying, oh no, employees are doing it, it has to have human input. And the answer is absolutely not. If you want to check what keywords your competition is ranking for, you're using a tool to do that. And that tool does not require any human input. It requires operating the tool and going in there and doing this once every 2 months to see what has changed. So some human input is required to write meta tags because you need to create something new. A lot of human input is required if you want to change your business strategy, right? So there's different levels of human input required to different tasks that we do in a business. And where AI shines the most is in that middle layer. If you don't need any human input, you can use existing automation tools. There's multiple of them, N8, Zapier, Make, all these. You don't need AI. You just need somebody to help you set up good automation to do these things. But if you need to write meta tags, and again, I'm just using an example from the search world, AI can do this amazingly. I just work, one of my clients is actually several of my clients are marketing agencies, but one of them are investing hours and hours and hours with each new client going through their entire website, going through what's in each and every one of the pages and writing meta tags that a lot of people don't do. Well, now they could do this for the entire site in 3 minutes instead of 46 hours on average per client so far. So these are examples of where AI comes in a place that is repetitive, or in this case not, but it requires some data analysis, requires some human input, and it does it very well. The other two things you must consider when you do these are the level of risk and the amount of value that it provides, right? So if it's high risk, so AI hallucinates, it makes stuff up. AI can not always represent what you want it to represent. So doing customer-facing world outbound stuff as your first thing may not be the smartest idea. So doing things that have lower risk, dealing with money, sending proposals, you know, these kind of things, yes, they're doable, but you still want to put a human buffer on top of it to see what's happening. So you're lowering the risk. And then high value, just so you prioritize, because you're going to have a list of 100 of these things that AI can help you with. How do you decide? You decide with the things that are going to either make you more money or save you more time or lead to some kind of other business benefit.
And that must be a huge problem for companies, is to figure out which ones have the most value. Because as you say, there's a list of 100 things, and we tend to just think, well, let's do them all. But that's obviously not practical. And the other is, which ones are going to make us, I mean, the low risk is which ones are going to make us look foolish.
Yep. And so the way I do this with my clients, I have a Google Sheets, really sophisticated document, but that does it. But if we break what the document does, is it really starts on a very high level. What are the big things your company does? Okay, we do HR, we do finance, we do marketing, we do sales, we do business development. Okay, underneath that, what are the big boulders? So under sales, we do this, we do this, we do this. And then you go a layer deeper or two layers deeper beyond that. And you don't have to do this all at once. It's not like you got to stop the company to do this. All you want is people who are doing this to take notes. And if you're a more advanced company and using some kind of a task management system like Monday or Asana or ClickUp or one of those, then, ooh, is my video frozen? Oh, it was for a second.
Well, very slightly, but...
Asana and Monday and ClickUp and so on, you can look and you have all the breakdown of what people are doing. So you already have the list. And in this list, you can start looking at what out of those tasks, and when, once you have this more education, what out of those tasks can help me, AI can help me with more or less, and how much help does it provide and how much risk does it represent? And based on that, there's a scoring, and you can decide out of the list what you want to tackle.
Brilliant. So, okay, I mean, we're actually currently looking at using machine learning to improve the CaliQ Pro platform, which I built using my own super duper algorithms in PHP, MySQL, and my super duper relational database. So that's going to be our target. And it's looking at all the things we can do. And I get really excited about things we can do. And the trick is going to be, what is low risk? And mostly, what is high value?
Yes. And high value can mean different things, right? Could mean much more revenue. It can mean significantly less work. It could mean this could lead to new clients.
Yes, I know exactly what it means for us. And this is for Elisa, who's going to be managing this in 2024, is we take on Done For You clients, we work with them. And as we work with them, we figure out what's wasting our time on the CaliQ Pro platform when we're using it as an agency. So that by the time we get agencies on board at the end of next year is where we're really going to push the agencies. They will have a foolproof system where they just click a button, the whole thing happens. Brilliant.
That's brilliant. It's brilliant because this is exactly the approach I recommend to my clients, right? Start with in-house stuff. Start with in-house stuff. Then there's no risk. Like, even if it breaks, okay, so you wasted 20 minutes trying to make it work or 2 hours, but it's not going to break your business.
So it looks like we've lucked in on the right solution. Well done, us.
Yes. Well done. And so these are the assessments, right? We talked about strategic low-hanging fruits and HR skills. And then you need to develop a plan. Now that you know what needs to be done, you need to develop a plan. And when I say develop a plan, the biggest thing is that this has nothing to do with AI, just good leadership and good management, is you need to define different KPIs. And you have the list of 10 top things that AI can help you with. The things people jump to is like, oh, this will probably save us 30% of the work to do this thing that we put out as number one. Like, okay. But to get to that 30%, there's 10 steps to get there. And if you put the 30% as a goal, you won't know whether you're actually tracking towards that goal. So you got to put not just trailing indicators, but also leading indicators, such as, have we set up an AI committee? Have we done the analysis of all the activities in the different departments? Have we ranked these things? Have the AI committee evaluated solutions that might be applicable for these things that we're trying to solve? So these are the KPIs that will show you that you're actually making progress in Q1 of 2024 to actually hit the 30% savings in Q3 of 2024. Or you can wait to Q3 and see what happens, which is not a recommendation I would give anybody.
Right. Which is what most people do, is say, well, my gut tells me this, poof, 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 let's try that and see what happens 3 months down the road. It's all going to pot. The whole thing's falling apart and it's then too late.
So defining the steps within the AI lens that will get you to where you want to go is the key to actually getting there. And then,
so it's what do we do? Define the steps, mark the or set out the KPI so we know where we're going as we move through the steps. Absolutely simple and brilliant and genius.
Yeah. Pretty, like I said, pretty straightforward management, but yet a lot of people somehow miss that step. Yes. The next thing is encourage usage. And I'll put a caveat in there. It's encourage usage within the defined guidelines, right? It's like there's risk factors, like this is how we play, this is how we don't play, because people can do really foolish things with it. Within those guidelines, you want people to use it as much as possible because it will give you an edge over your competition. And you do this by sharing AI wins in all hands meetings. You do this by sharing what you're doing when you're talking to people as a leader in the business. Say, hey, you know, I tried this. This is what I got. You do this by having an item on implementation on each department call that they do regularly, whether every week, every other week. So what have we done on AI improvement, or what have people learned using AI this week? So you encourage it in a very active way so people understand it's not frowned upon, but actually the other way around. We want you to do this as much as possible within the guidelines.
Brilliant, which for the CaliCube system means that in the weekly all-hands team meeting, Marianne can now add a little section of AI tips, tricks, successes that separate to the rest of it is just a little chunk at the end where anybody who has a win or a success or a handy hint brings it up. I'm saying that openly so that Marianne will then listen to this and implement it. I don't have to remember to tell her or ask her.
Fantastic. The last thing, which is very tactical, it's the only really tactical thing on this list, but it makes a huge difference in the outcome, is coming up with what's called a prompt library. So what is a prompt library? Most of the AI tools have some kind of a prompting function, which is how you give it instructions, right? Whether it's ChatGPT or Bard or an image generation or whatever the case may be. And you can just have people come up with their prompts and use them and keep on inventing them as you go along. The disadvantage is that a lot of knowledge gets wasted because everybody comes up with different things, and somebody came up with a brilliant prompt that does exactly what you need to do for all your clients, but then other people are not using it, or the same person is still doing new stuff every time. So the idea behind a prompt library is to take the things that work very well and to share it with everybody. So everybody's in that step already. They don't have to keep on trying to get there. And B, you get consistency, and company is all about consistency. You cannot have three different people produce three different products for the same client or even three different clients, because then you can't run the business. And so having a prompt library shared somewhere, it could be anything. It could be on a Google Sheets. It could be on a shared thing on a ClickUp or like some kind of a shared resources. It could be, I use a Chrome extension called Magical that is, I use it for a million other things, but it's just like a shortener of a lot of text into some kind of a trick code. And so I can have five paragraphs of a prompt, and all I have to put in is four characters, and it will bring those three paragraphs, and I can share those across other people in my organization. So that's how we use it, but it doesn't matter as long as you have these shared things. And
right. And that reminds me, sorry, of something else, which is something we've been working on. And what we're trying to do is make the balance between building basically dedicated bots just using a prompt. So we've got one Kali bot that has all the stuff in its little brain. And then we have individual prompts that Leanne brought up as an idea that create sub-bots, and they all have a specific role. But then the problem is allowing access to specific people so they don't get overwhelmed with the number of possibilities and they stick to what they're supposed to be doing, which is, I think, the trick that we need to play. And Damri's organizing it so that it becomes, when I access, I get a specific list of sub-bot prompted thingy bots, which I hope is the way to do it. You're nodding, so it looks like it is.
So yeah, it is. It's so the idea is not to share all the prompts with everybody, because then you have 1,000 prompts, and then it's kind of like Slack, right? Slack started as a great idea. Like, oh, there's a channel for everything. But now you have 30,000 channels you're in, and you don't have a clue where to go anymore. And it just goes ding, 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 ding all day long. So everybody shut it off. And I'm like, oh, so then what's the point? So the idea is exactly this, right? Is we have within Magical, we have different libraries that are for different categories of the business. And in each and every one of them, we only share the stuff that is relevant. There's always the there's it, within Magical, you have the main list that has everything, but you have these libraries where only have stuff on specific topics, and then it's a lot easier to find what you need to find.
And you use a tagging system, I would imagine, so that you can have the same prompt in multiple libraries rather than a categorization system, which is very fixed.
It's exactly this.
Brilliant. Totally good.
So this does your ability to practice the daily practice of AI usage while keeping everybody. And by the way, the idea is still to let people experiment because maybe now there's a better prompt to do this thing. But that goes back to the committee. They will try stuff out, or if somebody has an idea, we'll bring it to the committee. They will play with it. Say, oh yeah, this is actually better. Let's replace the thing that we're sharing in the prompt library with this new prompt. And this is how the organization keeps on getting better. So these are my seven things, but we said eight. We said there's a bonus thing, right? And I'll go to my bonus thing. And my bonus thing,
I think
thing
I've got
is,
a bonus at the end. So we're going to have a bonus on the bonus.
Awesome.
So carry on.
So the bonus thing is human relationships. You're like, okay, what does that have to do with anything? So in the world where everybody's using AI, everybody will be able to do everything pretty freaking well. And a lot of research was done in this past year since generative AI became a thing that shows that people who are underperformers get a much bigger boost using AI than the top performers. So the gaps are closing, which means from companies' perspective, the aggregated capability of the company is going to close. So most companies will be able to do good or really good job if they know how to use AI. Which means, first of all, in the short term, right now, there's a huge opportunity because whoever's going to figure it out first is going to open a gap. But 3 years from now, everybody will know how to use it. It will be not like not knowing how to use Microsoft Office. Well, guess what? You don't have a job. It will be the same thing. So when you get there, when you get to that point that there's this equilibrium that AI tools create, that everybody can do things really well, what differentiates you? And that's human relationships. That means the people that will now invest in meeting their clients, going to conferences, creating their own live and virtual events, providing value regularly on social media, whatever way you do it, that builds human connection, will have a leg up once everybody gets to a level that it's much better than the average level today. So that's the last bonus point. And now I'm dying to hear your bonus point that you mentioned.
No, Before that, I wanted to make the point that I almost made a suggestion of what I had understood by what you had said with the human relationships aspect. And I was kind of thinking more along the lines of human in the loop. If the lower performers are being pulled up, then I'm thinking, well, the higher performers are going to make the difference because everybody's going to have that mid-range stuff. So it's the creativity in people's souls and hearts and brains that's going to make the difference, which I absolutely love because that's where I come from, a creative world. But that wasn't what you said at all. So I'm really glad I didn't throw my hat in the ring on that one. So I've added a bonus. And then my bonus is
awesome.
What happens if we flip all of that on its head? And instead of asking how can we use AI, is how do we as a company face up to other people and companies using AI on us? And that's, for me, not a question we're going to dig in today because it's huge. But for example, from our perspective, we're using AI, sure. But CaliCube's focus is on how do we help our clients and customers deal with Google's use of AI? Yeah. And that's a whole kettle of fish we can't get into today because we've already overrun by 10 minutes. That was absolutely brilliant. I loved every minute of it. And I now know 100% why Maria invited you on. Thank you, Maria. This is something for Marianne to look at and give us all a lesson in how we should be dealing with AI. Thank you, everyone, for watching. That was brilliant. We have one last question. My favorite moment often, but today I'm not sure it will be because I'll enjoy the rest of it so much. How does branded search help with business growth? And you can include AI or not, up to you.
So I will say something. It's literally perfect for me because I have these conversations with my clients. Search is going to change dramatically. Nobody knows how, by the way. I'm not sure Google knows how, but it's going to change dramatically because even today, with the snippet we have on top, a lot of people are going to that, which means nobody clicks or there's a lot less clicks. And if you kind of run the trajectory, nobody will click. Nobody will want search. People will want answer. And if there's an answer, nobody's going to your website. If nobody's going to your website, why do you have 67 blog posts or 670 blog posts? And so the importance of branded search becomes very, very critical. Because if somebody will search for you because they have seen you somewhere, you win. It doesn't matter what the AI says. If somebody will look for your brand, they will find you. If somebody looks for an answer related to your brand, the chances they will find you, even if you do a lot of SEO work, is significantly lower.
Brilliant. That's my favorite answer. So it was my favorite question of the whole thing. And I would take that, and this is another bonus. You said answer. And what I love here is we've gone from search engines to answer engines. And if you look at generative AI now in search, it's got follow-up questions, assistive engines.
Correct.
So we're now moving to assistive engines. And if you haven't nailed answer and assistive engines now, by the end of 2024, you're really going to be struggling. So start today. Thank you so much, Izhar. That was absolutely brilliant. Wonderful, delightful. Thank you, everyone, for watching. We're now going to introduce next week, which is Chris. That's going to be super, hugely interesting. Chris is wonderfully smart, and I'm really looking forward to that. Could you pass the baton, Izhar?
Yeah, so by passing the baton to Chris, I'm certain he has a few very interesting tricks up his sleeve, so definitely check him out.
Brilliant. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Izhar. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. I've said that about 5 times. It doesn't matter. Bye-bye. See you next week. A quick goodbye to you and the show. Thank you, Izhar. CaliCube. It's all about your brand SERP.